Hey Sasha, this is Dave. How are you?
Hey, I'm so good. It's nice to hear your voice.
Great, the same. It's to be here. I really appreciate it, and thank you again for your flexibility.
Oh gosh, not a problem. I wanted to take advantage of your time. So I got one email from someone who has to take her kids to a Halloween party, so she won't be joining us. So we should have 6 or 7.
Okay, super.
Okay. And do you want me to introduce you, or do you want to just introduce yourself, or how do you want to start that off? Welcome, Cynthia.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
I'm Dave Krueger.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks.
I didn't hear the last part of your sentence, Dr. Dave, in terms of the beginning part.
Oh,
introduction.
Whatever would work best for you. If you want to introduce, that's great, or I'll do it.
It'll take me an hour to read your resume.
Well, you know, I was doing a retreat for a buddy of mine, and she had wanted me to do that for a year or two, and we finally worked out something, and she said, well, how would you like me to introduce you? And I said, well, just say that I'm a dad and a husband, and if he's any good, the rest will take care of for itself. And she did.
I'm going to do the same thing.
Okay.
Right. And Cynthia, you pretend you haven't heard that.
Okay. It'll be just as delightful.
That's great. Thank you. So, Dr. Dave, are you back in Texas, New Orleans? Where are you?
I am at my ranch this weekend. I am about to I'm going to do something really different. in the month of November, starting in just a few days, I'm going to do a working sabbatical. I'm going to spend a month in New Orleans in the French Quarter.
Right.
We have a house in the French Quarter, and I'm going to finish up a book. I'm still going to do my calls, but you know, with clients and classes, but you know, spend the time doing that. And
that's great. That's
yeah,
right.
I'm
you
excited.
Told me that.
I wasn't
sure about the timing. Well, November 1st is tomorrow, so
well, yeah,
I'm going to
delay it some. Yeah.
Great. Just an FYI that our group sometimes is a minute or two late.
yeah. Cynthia, where are you from?
I'm originally from Kentucky, but I live in Florida now. I've lived here for 3.5 years.
Oh, okay.
You both have the Southern accent in common.
I noticed that. I hear it in you. I deny it in me. And I.
I tried to deny it for years, and then I decided to just embrace it. And
welcome, Nikki.
Hi, thank you.
I'm here with Cynthia and Dr. Dave, and we're just waiting for a welcome, Minx. I'm here with Nikki and Cynthia and Dr. Dave, so we're just waiting for a couple more people to call in. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Hi, Nikki.
I'm
Minx.
Great.
Hello.
Hi.
You know, could Sasha, may I do something while we're waiting for everybody to join?
Of course.
What I'd like to get from each of you, I have some things that I've put together that I hope will be useful for the business of your coaching, but what I'd like to get from each of you is a couple of questions. One is, what would you most like to know or ask about a coaching business or setting up a coaching practice? Any pressing question that you'd like me to be sure and cover that you really have been thinking about?
Most like to know. I think for me, I'd like to know anything.
Oh, I can do that.
Yeah, but also, like, I'm not that familiar with how the coaching business takes place. Like, what are the possible ways, modalities of coaching? Like, how can you, because, you know, me personally, I teach in the yoga studios, have a lot of interaction with private clientele, group
right.
classes, teacher training, and I imagine somewhere there's a way to, utilize these skills within that setting and to create new possibilities. But I guess I don't really know, like, how coaches coach. Like, do they all do it by phone? Is it in person? What's the possibility in the coaching universe?
Okay. All right. Great question.
Because there's probably all kinds of ways people do it that I don't even know about.
Yeah, there are. But that's a great question. Questions that others of you have?
I have a question. Oh, go ahead, Cynthia. You go ahead first.
Okay. I would definitely like to talk about niche and branding, if that's possible. And also, I have a question around if you have a different focus. So for some of us, we may have, a yoga business and a coaching business and then maybe something else. And how do you merge the three? Or do you keep them separately regarding, you know, incorporation or that sort of thing?
Okay. All right. All right. Good question. Thank
you. Welcome, Kia. We've got Dr. Dave on the line, and we're just waiting for Anna. Jenny will be joining us late, and Mel has to take her kid to a Halloween party. So she'll have to catch a recording. But if it's okay with you, Dr. Dave, I'd like to go ahead and get started and honor your time because it's so valuable, and I know you've got a lot of information to share with the group. And for everyone, I just want to introduce Dr. Dave as an amazing father, an amazing husband, and if he's any good, everything else will just fall into place here. So take it away, Dr. Dave.
Thank you for that challenge. I appreciate that. That's great. Kia, I had asked as a beginning while we were waiting for everyone if there's a particular question about the business of coaching and setting up a coaching practice that you have, I'd really like to know so that I can incorporate that in the discussion. I have a number of things I want to present to you, but I want to be sure and cover things that are really burning questions for each of you. So anyone else? I know we were kind of midway with that. Any other things?
I do. I have a question. This is Nikki. And I was talking to a friend of mine. He is he has a business insurance, and he works with really big companies. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm taking this life coaching course. And he goes, oh, that's really cool. In our company, we actually provide coaches for all of our employees. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. But at that time, I had not even started the course. Well, I was about to start the course. And my question is, are there companies that employ coaches? And if there are you familiar with them, and how would we get in touch with it? Because I think it would be really cool to work for a company that is already in a business and, you know, kind of go that corporate route.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a great question. And there are a number of companies that have their own coaching staff. They have internal coaches. And that's the distinction when you hear the term internal coaches. Those are ones usually hired by the company to work with people who are also employees of that company. And external coaches are when you come in from the outside, either privately for an individual or hired by the company to come in from the outside. And that is definitely a way to go if you're interested in being employed by a coaching firm that does that. There are a number of coaching firms that do that, and you'll have to, they're mostly private and mostly small. There are two or three large firms, but it's definitely a way to go if you're interested in doing that. And another thing to think about, one of the things that I do is to I have a program to come into companies to help them train their mentor coaches, to train their mentors basically, to develop a mentoring program. So, you know, some aspect of that may be something that that you may be interested in. But I hear, let me be sure, are there any other questions before I launch into this? Because I want to wrap in what kind of questions you have and the issues that you bring into a discussion. Anything else? Okay, well, one agreement that I have with my clients, I would request that agreement of you, that I request to be able to interrupt the client at any time, because if a coachable moment is at that instant, I don't want to wait for three or four paragraphs because I may lose the impact in the moment. And I would like it to be the same for you. If there's something that you want to ask or have me expand on, feel free to interrupt me. I'm not going to do lecture mode. Actually, on Sasha's line, I don't know how to do it anyhow. But I want to keep the line open, so I'll ask you to manage the background noise so that we can have a discussion. If there's anything that you want me to expand on or that's not clear, feel free to interrupt me, because I want to make this of maximum use to each of you. And that's why I wanted to ask, are there particular things that you have in mind? So you're asking some good questions that kind of began before where I was going to begin, so that's great. So looking at modalities and approaching the whole notion of coaching, we've already begun talking about internal versus external coaches, about looking at coaching consortiums or companies that hire coaches. Now, there are advantages and disadvantages to that. If you are hired by a group, you don't make as much money, but you also don't have to, bill and market and that sort of thing. So you pay for that, and you will have to coach according to the framework of the companies that do that. For example, and Sasha, please feel free to jump in at any point. I'm very interested in your experiences and perspective too. There are a couple of groups that I'm an affiliate of. One is Coach Source, CoachSource. It's the executive coaching group on the West Coast that was begun by the guy that really started executive coaching. Is run now by Dr. Brian Underhill. And they have contracts with large companies, and they'll see if there's somebody in a particular area that wants the particular coaching job. You know, I've done very little with them because they mostly want to do most of their larger companies, their corporate people want to do on-site. So I don't really do that very much at all. Another is Career Partners International. They hire external coaches for different situations. I'm working with one, actually a buddy of mine runs the one in Houston, and we're doing a coaching deal at MD Anderson Hospital. So look for the ones in your area. You know, there are probably a number of coaches. A couple of buddies of mine have virtual firms and have coaches. And a usual setup may be, for example, that they will assign a particular coach to a situation and set it up and then take 25%. So there are a lot of setups and a lot of ways to go. For the question about, you know, how do you coach in person by telephone, any possibility exists. I do all of, and I'll be happy to share all of my experience with you and anything you'd like to ask me. If you'll agree not to hear it, is that's the way you should do it. But this is just one way, and this is just the way that Kruger happens to do it. So I do all of my work by telephone. Even the people I work with in Houston, some of whom I've never met, because we do all of our work by telephone. But what that means is that you have an international venue. You can work with anyone in the world and people from all over the world by telephone. And it really, it means that you can work also anywhere you are. You know, I'm not at my office right now. Next month, I'm not going to be at my office for the entire month, but I'm still going to do my work with clients. So it really makes the possibilities just exponential in doing that. And your clients don't have to be, you know, they can do the privacy of their home or their office call you at the time. It's pure work. They don't have to get in their car, schlep across town, park, wait, do the same at the end. And just after a single time, even if they've never done it before, they will see the benefit in doing that, that they, at the appointed time, go in their office or their home, close the door, and call you, and it's pure work. And you can get every bit as much information by telephone as you can in person, even if you've become accustomed to using a lot of visual cues, because that was a concern that I had, because for over 2 decades practicing psychiatry and psychoanalysis, I'd done almost everything in person. So my transition was fraught with a little bit of concern, but I was quickly disavowed of any concern at all because I saw how useful it was and how easy it was. So any thoughts about that or any questions about that in terms of the modalities and the framework? Yes.
I was curious, how do you reach an international market?
Okay, let's talk a little bit about marketing. I wasn't planning to do that before we got to the basics, but if I were going to start, and Sasha, I'd be interested in your thoughts about this. If I were going to start right now in coaching, day one, right now, and had nothing going, the first thing I would do in terms of marketing, well, let me back up and get really fundamental. The first things I think you need to do to set up a practice, and then let's talk about marketing. So let's take this step by step. To set up a practice, you will need basically letterhead stationery and a business card and a landline. Even if you plan to do all of your work in person, I think you still need a landline and a number that's dedicated to coaching. And I want to go over some home office tips in just a minute, but let's start really simply and move forward. A number that's dedicated specifically to your coaching business so that when someone calls and leaves a message, they're going to hear your message from your coaching business. So the first and the fundamental investment I would suggest making is a telephone, a landline, and a headset, so that you can have hands free and so you can get better reception and so there's no distortion whatsoever. I would suggest a letterhead and a business card. The letterhead meaning that you can send a notice to people who may be your referral sources, who may be clients, announcing your practice of coaching and letting them know what you do, and then do a follow-up call, even if they're, especially if they're out of your region, so that you get some contact and so they know what you're doing and how to refer to you. The other couple of fundamental things that I think are important is to establish a business checking account where all of your income and all of your expenses flow through. And your expenses can flow through that by writing checks directly and by writing one check a month to your business credit card. Have a business credit card that you pay all of your expenses. And let me do a sidebar here. If there are things that I don't answer, I want to give you my email so you'll be able to address them and send me an email. If you're interested in the categories of expenses for deductible expenses that I have, there are 12 or 13, I'll be happy to send you that, because that's what I spend a total of about 15 minutes a year with all the bookkeeping and the accounting of my business. Because all I do at the end of the month, actually I do this at the end of the year, is to go through and number each of the expenses on the statement for the credit card according to what that is, professional entertainment, supplies, books, whatever, you know, according to the number, hand that and my check stubs to my accountant, and that's it. And think about the things that you do when you have your own business. One of the huge benefits of having your own business is that you can protect so much of the income because there are so many business-related expenses that all you have to do is document them. You do business travel that's related to marketing, public relations. You do a lunch that you take somebody to, you write down on the back of the credit card receipt who you had lunch with, the business purpose, and the date. And there are so many things, you know, supplies, books, everything that is related at all to your business is a deductible expense. Even business travel. Have you ever wondered why so many books are based in Monte Carlo and Paris instead of Newark, New Jersey? Because travel is deductible. I hardly ever commit a non-deductible act. So those are the basic things to think about in terms of setting up the framework of your business. Now, one additional thing that I would recommend, and this is to make it easy for you and the client, is somebody can pay you for your services by a check, or you can simply, and I'm told it takes 4 or 5 minutes. I don't do this because I get my web guy to do it, to set up an account at PayPal or one of the other online payment sources like that, where you can send somebody a link, and they can pay you a monthly retainer prior to the first session, and it automatically recurs every month. In other words, you set it up where somebody pays you your monthly retainer fee on the 12th of the month, and the 12th of the next month, it automatically charges it. That way, you have a record. The client has a record. You don't have to invoice. The client doesn't have to mail a check. You don't have to pursue payment. None of that. So that's a very easy way to do that, to have it recurring, and it's automatically going to PayPal, and as soon as you get ready to transfer PayPal into your business checking account, that takes about 10 seconds. You do an online transfer of funds. Now, I'll talk about fees in just a minute, but does that make sense so far? I know this is a lot of stuff, and probably a lot of it's new, and a big challenge if you haven't set and collected professional fees before. It'll be new and different, but many of you may have done this as you do, you know, individual yoga instruction and various things. But any questions about that? I want to be sure this all makes sense to you and is useful to you. Does that mean it makes sense?
Yeah, no, it makes sense. It seems like a lot of steps.
it's really two or three or four things that just are to set up the business. You know, the stationery, business card, the telephone, and the business banking account, and the checking account. That's actually five things. That will take you 2 or 3 hours, and you're set to go. And think about any other business that you can launch and have the seed capital be a total of maybe $300. And most of that is for, you know, the landline and the headset. So that's why I want to be sure these make sense, because they sound like a lot because I'm stringing them together end on end. But they're discrete steps, and they're fairly simple to do. Let me just talk about the framework here and talk about some home office tips, because this is also a benefit that you can have an office at home. I gave up my professional office. I did it way longer than I should have. I waited about 18 months, but I could have done it in month one if I'd have, you know, hadn't loved it so much and loved the setting and the art. And, you know, here's some home office tips that might be helpful to put together and to think about in terms of developing a home office. One is allocate, and I'll be happy to send you a list. I just have an outline that I have jotted down, and I'll be happy to dictate that and send you a list if you'd like the list. One is to allocate a specific place for work. And that means, like, designate a desk or a separate room for work. Ideally, be able to leave this spot and keep it out of your line of vision when your work day is complete. Secondly, create rules for other occupants of your household. Enlist their support to honor the time you need for work. Now, that's going to be a bigger challenge with small children. But think about if you were at an office away from home, you wouldn't be there at all. So that kind of thinking about partitioning and having a boundary needs to exist even though you're in the home. in your mind first, because you're going to establish the model and the respect and the regard and the boundaries that you have will be downloaded by other people and more likely to be respected by other people. Assign a start and stop time for your workday. Again, about boundaries. And as I mentioned, a separate landline and headset will be a fundamental investment. And what you get with a headset is a mute button. It's a button. It's not a star six yet, and you lose three or four words when a client's talking. A mute button is instant for background noise, for sneezes, as well as the separate line for your coaching allows a customized message. And I'd suggest turn the ringer off when you leave the office. You know, for example, one thing that I do, I'm an early riser from my days at the on the farm, and I still get up. And my creative time, my biorhythms, that my creative time is early in the morning. So from 6 to 9, I'm in my office, and the phone's not plugged in. There's no chance of anyone interrupting me because that's my time. That's my time to write. That's my time to do various things that I want to be immersed in the space of that time. So I'm not available. Keep distractions to a minimum. It's useful and economical to not mix states of mind. For example, editing and writing, two different states of mind. They need to be two different tasks, not to go back and forth. Ideally, have an office door you can close. Closing the door is literal and figurative to keep you remain focused at work. Another, create a transition between work and private time that allows changing state of mind. Think about how if you had an office, you have that transition time automatically by having time in your car. You're listening to a book, you're listening to jazz, you're doing something, you're talking on the phone, but you have that transition time, but you walk out of your office and boom, it's instant. So that needs to be created and instituted by you. If you don't do it, it's not going to happen. Keep evenings and weekends sacred and use them to recharge. Now, your weekend doesn't have to correspond to the calendar. It may be Tuesday and Wednesday, but both family and clients need to know this and to respect it. 9, remember to connect with others and not isolate. This is also going to be something that's very important for you to do in terms of developing a practice to network, to meet with network groups, women's breakfast clubs, professional network groups. One thing that I really think is beneficial, Toastmasters. It will help you learn to speak on your feet, to speak with clarity, brevity, simplicity, and you'll be in a benevolent atmosphere to get other people to give you feedback and to listen to others as you do things from like the table topics, which is speaking 1 to 2 minutes on a specific topic that you're given as you're on the way up to the podium. It helps you learn to think on your feet. And the pen speeches that you give, there's all kind of useful information about how to put them together. What I did was to join Toastmasters when I did my transition from therapy and analysis to coaching, and used the first 3 or 4 talks that I gave at Toastmasters as a planned putting them together for a keynote. So by the time I had done like 4 Toastmasters presentations, I'd memorized each and I'd gotten feedback for each and honed them and that sort of thing. I had a keynote all ready to go. So it was very beneficial because what you'll want to do, and there are a lot of neuroscience studies that have emphasized this about how you need to speak clearly, briefly, succinctly, and always be aware of not speaking very long at all, because the way our brain organizes things, we organize it in chunks and we listen in bullets. So if you're accustomed to speaking in paragraphs, which I was, you have to really work at really speaking clearly and simply. You've probably already done this when you've, say, ask a client a question and the coach, you've seen that what works the best is to ask a clear, specific, simple question and then wait. You don't want to give give multiple choices. You don't want to expand on it. You don't want to, you know, disguise an opinion in the form of a question. You want to ask a clear, brief, simple sentence and then stop, because some people will need that contemplative space to think. And I know we're off of our topic here, but, you know, they're thinkers. They're going to wait and give you an answer. So you need to respect that working silence. Other people are talkers. You never guess which I am. They began to see what they have to say, and by the time they're finished, they may have an answer, hopefully. So there are different styles that you may want to be aware of. Oh, let me mention, too, as a sidebar here, there are some papers on my website that I've put there specifically for coaches that might be of interest to you under the Articles tab. And work and performance styles, personality styles are all useful in terms of better honing your empathic listening. The website is mentorpath.com, mentorpath.com. And the final home office tip, delegate specialty tasks to specialty resources. You know, examples are like bookkeeping, accounting, IT, you know, to have somebody put together a website. Now, ideally, you're not going to be able to do only what you do uniquely well in the beginning. You're going to have to do a lot more as you develop your practice. But at some point, ideally, you will probably want to do only what you do uniquely well and delegate everything else. That was the first exposure I had to coaching. There were a couple of people who were in analysis with me in the early 90s, like 90, 91, who went to Toronto to work with Dan Sullivan. And at that time, this is $90 and $91, they paid $25,000 for a day and a half. And essentially what they did with him, and I'm about to save you guys $25,000 in 1991 money, he would ask them to go through their day and their work, their business, and to make a list of everything they did uniquely well, better than anybody else. A list of all the things they did exceptionally well, and then on down to things they did okay and then things they weren't so good at. And he said, I can guarantee you that if you follow my recommendation, you'll work more happily, you'll work far less, you'll make significantly more money, you'll have a great deal more time off. Do only what you do uniquely well and delegate everything else. Now, we can't start that way, but it's kind of of an idea to have in mind to get to. Now, I want to talk a little bit about fees. I didn't see the questions that you asked at the beginning about fees, but I want to talk about that because that's something that's usually not a zone of familiarity. But are there any questions so far? Now, don't hesitate because, you know, this is all new ground for each of you, I think, in some ways at least. So don't worry about a question sounding goofy because I welcome Jenny. This is Dave.
Hi, sorry about that. Hi, Dave. I'm going to put myself on mute. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions so far about anything that we've talked about? Now, does that mean that makes sense or that it just is too much that you don't know where to begin to ask? Part of the dilemma I have is there's so much I want to convey to you, and I know that you know I'm squeezing a lot into a very compressed time, and there's the danger of it getting too rushed or too much, and I just want to be sure I give it to you, but we don't get to talk as much, and I love a seminar, as you guys have been having, I know, with Sasha. Was there a performing question there in the back?
No, this is great.
Okay.
No, it's me.
Okay, I want to talk about fees by giving you a question. This is a multiple-choice question. And this was a survey by the Wharton School of Business. They surveyed several thousand professionals and determined the major thing that resulted in someone accepting the recommendation for professional services or refusing the recommendation for professional services, and it was the same both ways. The same factor was most important for accepting and refusing. So what do you think it was? The credentials of the professional, the reputation of the professional, the experience, the amount of the fee, or the state of the economy? What's your guess? Take a chance.
Can you see them again?
Okay. Credentials, degrees and letters behind somebody's name and certifications on that. Reputation, experience, the amount of experience somebody's had, including years of experience. Amount of the fee, or state of the economy?
The fee.
The amount of the fee? Okay. That's a great guess. Anybody else?
Maybe reputation.
Uh-huh. Okay. You ready for the answer?
Yeah.
None of the above. It was whether the professional stated the recommendation and the fee clearly and confidently. Because what someone purchases, and we're talking this in a crass way, that it is about sales. I know we're not thinking about selling ourselves or selling coaching, but at some point the transaction is a purchase of your professional services. And what is the primary determinant of whether someone signs on or does not is state of mind, whether you speak clearly and confidently. And that is so very important. The credibility of professionals was hurt when they were fuzzy about fees. It damages the trust the client has. And for most people, the issue wasn't whether fees were high or low, but that the professional was clear, direct, and specific, and especially confident about recommendations and fees. This was more important than the amount of the fees or any of the other variables. There are a lot of reasons for that, but what we convey to someone and the state of mind that we convey is what they pick up in mirror neurons and resonate with. And this is part of our effectiveness, that we produce a state of mind with someone. And this is something that is, I think, a very important part of what we do, is helping someone regulate a state of mind. So that really sets the tone. So let's talk a little bit about fees and value. Now,
can I interrupt for a minute?
Absolutely.
Okay, so just so that I'm clear on what you just said regarding fees and recommendations, are you saying that if the message about your services and your fee is clear and confident, then you're more likely to obtain what you're seeking?
Absolutely.
Is that what you're saying?
That someone is far more likely to sign on for your professional services.
Okay. And is that written word or is that the vocal?
It's the entire state of mind, your words as well as how you convey it. Because think about how when you meet with a professional, a doc, a dentist, a CPA, an attorney, a financial professional, you want to believe in that person because that's what they're conveying in that confidence and clarity. And I believe that's the most important thing that we can offer a client, is that we believe in a client, because then they're going to teach us why. And the most important thing then that they can perceive is not only that belief in themselves, but that they believe in us, that we're the professional that they believe in and can dare to risk some of their best feelings and their never-before-discussed issues to look at how they're going to bring these things into focus and illumination, to look at some possibilities and develop a co-creative work with us. Hi, welcome. This is Dave.
Hi, Dave.
I know you'll catch up with the recording. We were just talking in the beginning way about fees. There are a couple of key elements to people really paying top dollar for coaching services. First is the coach deserves it. The second, the coach asks for it. Now, it's up to you to set your own price. It will reflect what you think of yourself. ask for less and the world will not raise your price. People will assume this reflects your value. If I were to come to your door and say, hey, I've got a brand new BMW 550 out here that I'll sell you for $7,500, what would you say?
No, thanks.
Well, you'd wonder what was the matter with it or what was the matter with me. So when you set a fee that's less than your full value, you make people wonder about what's the matter. I'll give you some examples of that. If somebody's on a cell phone or a computer phone, would you mute because we're getting an echo? One simple way to go about setting fees, we talked about method of payment, to have an online payment. One thing that I prefer in my practice is to have a monthly retainer. And that monthly retainer is paid before the first session, and it covers everything that we do for that month, including a standing time. And I think a standing time works way better for your schedule and the client's, and you know and have a predictable time. And whatever material that you may send or whatever interim email or telephone calls, which hardly ever occurs, but the retainer really reflects the nature of the work we do. Think about how you go get a massage. 45 minutes, you're out of there. The masseuse doesn't think about you. You don't think about that person. It's an event. What we're doing, though, in coaching is a process, because there are going to be things a client is going to send you a prep form before their session. Oh, on my website that I mentioned, mentorpath.com, under the coaching tab, it's the second from the left, the second drop down is client information packet, and you are totally welcome to use any part of that. That, I believe, Sasha, isn't that in the curriculum? When I did the curriculum, I think I put the forms in there as well. So yes?
I need to double check. There's a whole section on supporting documents and things that
shifted
since the last one, but I think it's there.
Yeah, I believe it's in the supporting documents. And there's also a portion of that that's a contract. You're welcome to use any of mine, but those are in the curriculum, and you're certainly welcome to use those. So I ask someone to fill out the client information pack, and I send them a link for an online payment, if they prefer that. If they'd rather send me a check, that's fine, before our first session. And the monthly retainer covers the entire month. Now, that may vary in terms of what you charge. I began, when I first began coaching, I began charging a monthly retainer of $1,050. And that covered the weekly sessions plus the material that I would send and that sort of thing. I didn't have nearly as much material in those days. But it works really well. And a couple of things that my mentor coach suggested to me as I set fees is that you not have a fee as a monthly retainer that has a lot of zeros in it. You know, like if you decide to set it for $1,000, that's a lot of zeros. And think about how, there's only a couple of neuroscience studies that validated this, but think about how many things are $9.95 instead of $10. You just perceive it as less money. It doesn't, you know, have that big impact, that sticker shock. The other is to not set a fee that's divisible by four, because somebody will start doing the math. You say $1,000, they'll say, oh, man, that's $250. That's a lot of money. So if you charge $9.75 or $10.50, it works both ways. And it was something my mentor coach suggested. I did, and it's made sense ever since. And that's something that I think is also very beneficial if you have an opportunity to do that, to jumpstart your practice, to work with a mentor coach. A whole number of things can really go much more quickly and much more easily. There are some common mistakes that I see made in professional fee setting. One is setting fees based on your peers. Most coaches have fees that are too low or outdated. They may have different expertise than you, may not be as good as you, may be in a different niche. Another is setting fees based on not seeing yourself as an expert. Now remember, to coach, you don't have to be a content expert to coach someone. You don't have to have had your appendix out to do an appendectomy as a surgeon. Your expertise as a mentor coach is choice architecture, and you are skilled at helping someone change, to look at change and transition. However you apply that, whatever niche you apply that. Another mistake, determining your fee based on where you live. If you work by telephone, you have an international venue, and it shouldn't make any difference what you charge whether you live in the Upper East Side of New York or in Reynolds County, Texas. A false belief that you may not be able to help those in need if you're in need if your fees are too high. That's something that you can't determine what someone will do. One thing that you could do, for example, if you have a client who just simply can't afford your fee because of their cash flow, is that you may offer to spread out the sessions to meet twice a month so that your monthly retainer will last for 2 months. Don't ever mark yourself down, my advice. Another mistake, keeping your fees low until you're certified, you have more expertise, more experience, until you're a bestseller or you have a closer to full practice. Another mistake, deciding that clients can't pay or won't pay. You have no idea, and you have no right to decide if they can or can't pay. You can clearly and confidently state your fees. Now, also, another feature, another mistake, actually, is over-delivering. And here's how that can look. Sessions run over. You're overly available to clients. You're afraid to raise your fees. As compensating for self-doubt about values or fees, you over-deliver in some way. And that's something that I think really you're teaching your client how to respond to you by what you convey. Now, I know that some of you had some questions that I want to get to that had to do with marketing. I hadn't really planned to talk about that, but I'll be happy to. Are there any questions so far about the business aspect of coaching that we've talked about, or things that I didn't touch on that you'd like to hear?
I was just curious, what's an example of an outdated coaching fee?
Charging $75 to $125 a session, charging $275 as a monthly retainer, charging $375 as a monthly retainer. I think you're worth way more than that. Think about the value that you bring, the change that, you know, it's hard to create metrics for that for life coaching, but you can make, you will have an opportunity. The exciting thing that is in store for each of you, if you apply the principles that you've gleaned, the tools and methods and principles that you've gleaned in the work with Sasha, you're going to be significantly more effective and affect lives in a significant way. If you decide to have a parallel track of coaching in addition to your yoga work, I think you'll have a significant impact and an impact on people that will be of moment for the rest of their lives. So I think you're in for some exciting time to look at possibilities. Coaching, the coaching business is a new frontier. I mean, it hasn't been around that long. So think about the things that you can synthesize and integrate from your experiences, from your training, and from your passion to coaching and enhance what you do and what clients do. And the exciting times and contributions that you have ahead. It's a really exciting time. You know, I thought that I would never enjoy anything as much as I did doing therapy and analysis with the people I did, because I saw just terrific people, really creatively stimulating people. I've had an even greater time in coaching, in doing work in coaching, and in doing training, like talking to you guys right now. It's more than I ever imagined. You know, I can be even more myself and tell more stories in coaching than I ever could behind an analytic couch. So I think you're in, each of you are in for a treat and a really exciting creative time, however you apply this material about coaching.
May I have a question?
Absolutely.
This is Anna. I was late. Yes. Since you first started coaching, when did you change your fee? Like, did you progressively increase your fee, or it's been the same since you first started?
No, I did my transition from practicing therapy and analysis. I retired at 25 years. I decided to write and ranch, and that lasted about 2 months, and then I went and did my coach training and certification. I started out at $1,050. I have increased my fee a bit throughout, kind of based on inflation, but I've added other categories because I do different kind of work. I'll work with executives and business owners, and that involves a bit more and different kind of work than life coaching. For that, I charge $21.50. And when I work with CEOs or really complex situations like pro athletes or actors or that sort of thing, I charge a monthly retainer of $31.50. Now, there are different, you know, there are different things, and each of those, for example, has a link that I send somebody, so they don't see anything on my website about what different, you know, I don't want people to see that I have different fees for different situations or different kinds of engagement. Just like if you do a proposal, you don't send a bunch of different proposals. You send one proposal that specifies what you'll do and that sort of thing. Now, does that answer your question?
I guess my worry is that my worry is that when we have a fee that when we're starting out and we don't want to undersell or oversell ourselves, but experience has something to do with it. So I'm thinking, when is the time to make the change, or how realistic is to charge a lot and maintain that from the very, very beginning, and then allow experience to come in? Does it make sense what I'm saying?
I think it would be a mistake to wait until you feel you have experience to charge what you're worth. I would say confident is a state of mind. Get in a state of mind that you can be centered and grounded. And I know of all professionals, you guys know how to do that in yoga. There's a blog of mine that is on mantras, M-A-N-T-R. It's a very quick and easy way of doing that, of regulating a state of mind. It's something I do before I meet with each client, before I receive a phone call. It takes about 5 seconds. It's the second or third archived blog on my blog site, it has mantras in the title. It's something to get centered and grounded, and then state your recommendations, because that will help you speak clearly and confidently.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of waiting, because what does experience do? Experience helps you get clear and confident. So start with
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there a question?
No, I got you. Thank you very much.
Okay, absolutely. Now, there was a question about where do you get clients? If I were to start coaching right now, this is where I started and wanted to back into this. If I were to start coaching right now, start a coaching business right now, I would do the four or five things that I mentioned. And the first thing I would do in terms of marketing, after sending out a letter of announcement, then the letter of announcement would be maybe 12 or 15 at a time to people who I already have relationships with, who know my work and who know me, announcing that I'm working, that I'm opening a practice as a professional coach, and explaining what I do, and offering maybe a free sample session to anyone they refer, and a separate letter to potential clients offering them, that the ending would be different, offering them a free sample session. And then especially for prime referral sources, people who are gatekeepers, who have a portal of potential people exactly in the area that you want to develop your coaching practice, if they're in your area, take them to coffee or to lunch to be sure they understand what you're doing and how to refer to you. But the first thing I would do after that is start with a blog. And I'll tell you why. I was very reluctant to do a blog for a while. In fact, I was nudged unceremoniously by my last publisher, McGraw-Hill, when my last book came out, Secret Language of Money, because they really wanted me to do a blog, and they wanted me to start a few months before the book was published. And I kind of grudgingly did it. What I found out is I love doing it. It's exactly what I love doing. It's writing. It's in the flow of what I'm doing. And what I found out is that when I made just slight adjustments, mostly editing, to what I write and put it in a blog, a 200 or 300 word blog, and did that fairly regularly. And I didn't do it real often. I didn't do what some people do every day or three times a week, but I'd do maybe once a week in the beginning, and I had an editorial calendar. It took me 4 months to have the same number of subscribers to that blog as it took 4.5 years to have for my newsletter. And I did all the right things for the newsletter. It's on the homepage of my website. It's with one or two downloads of free white papers that appeal to different audiences that you get free for. And I had a great list of people who subscribe to my newsletter. So that's what you want, is the number of people who subscribe to you, who follow your work, who are interested in what you're doing. And let me give you an example. Whenever I am about to have an offering, in fact, you'll see my current blog. It's kind of a goofy blog, but at the bottom, it announces that I am offering an online retreat for Money Mastery. The last, and that just went out this morning. The last time I sent out, I did a blog that I was having an offering, a teleseminar on transitions. Within the first 24 hours, I had 22 people sign up for it. So that's what a blog will go viral. Because there are blog search engines. Whenever you put a key word in your title or in your first paragraph, it'll get picked up. If any of you do Google Alerts, it's the way I do a lot of research, to go to Google Alerts and type in the word I want to have notices of for anything that appears, you know, like neuroeconomics. So once a day I get an email from Google with all the articles in the world literature, from journals to New York Times, on neuroeconomics. And it'll be a title, an abstract, and a link to the article. So I'll go and see if I like it and copy it, and I'll keep a number until my stack gets high to read them. So that's how you're – and the bottom half of the Google Alerts is where there are blogs. And that's how you get known, and that's how it spreads virally. You also can go to other people's blogs of similar interest and write a comment, and they'll come and see your blog. You can even leave a link to your blog. So that's a great way of blogging. I've had clients from different continents who have called me to work with me because of reading a blog. So it really works. It's just something to think of. And the more specific you are in terms of your niche, the more branded your blog is. And the brand is really an internal organizer for you, and that's for your business, that your brand is an internal organizer. Like the internal organizer for my blog, although it doesn't say it anywhere, it's really about money, psychology, and neuroeconomics, but that is kind of roughly what it's about. It allows me to write pretty much about whatever I want to write about. But what you want to think about in developing your business is, what's your brand? I know we only have 2-3 minutes, but that's important in terms of really distinguishing yourself in the marketplace. What makes you distinct, unique, and memorable? What's the premium your client gets by doing business? And think about what distinguishes you. What's going to have that potential client or that referral source think of you when they think of someone for coaching? Now, I know we just have 2 or 3 minutes left. Questions that I didn't answer or questions that I raised or anything else you'd like to talk about?
Seems like it'd be really helpful to have a coach to help you set up your coaching business.
It's a significant benefit to have a mentor coach. And mentor coaching is not something, it's not like therapy. It's not 2 or 3 years. It's like 2 or 3 months. You can have a jump start for your business by you know, and that's something that you may have a very specific focus with mentor coaching. I have a couple of coaches who I'll go to and say, you know, Art, I need to buy an hour of your time. There's something that this situation has come up, or something with another. And people do that with me. People who I've seen as clients, they'll say, I need to schedule a session with you. So it's something you can do for a specific focus, or for a specific issue that comes up just for a single time. You know, I think it's really valuable to do that, to have a mentor who you can go to and know that that person is there, knows your story. I think it's tremendously valuable. And if, you know, it's something that we recommend at NCTA for those of you who are doing training. If it's at all possible, engage a mentor coach, or as soon as it's possible, engage a mentor coach. It's going to be of significant benefit. Most of the people on the CTA faculty do a discount for people who are current students. So yeah, I think it's really beneficial. The work I did with my mentor coach at the time that I was doing my training was at least as valuable as my training. And it was somebody I picked who had done a similar transition to mine. She was internationally known in her area of mental health, and she'd made a total transition to coaching. And that was exactly the person who was most helpful to me. So, Sasha, I know I feel the shepherd's hook coming here. I know we're out of time. I've squeezed through the last minute here. I want to extend my offer again. If I didn't answer a question, please feel free to email me, dkruger@mentorpath.com. D-K-R-U-E-G-E-R. It's been my privilege to do this. Thanks to all of you again for your flexibility for changing from next week to now so that we could do this. I know this has been a lot squeezed together, but I hope it's been beneficial for you, and I'll be eager to hear how things go for you. Thank you, Sasha, for inviting me. It's been a privilege.
You're welcome. Thank you for being here. Take care, Dr. Dave.
Absolutely. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye to all of you, and good luck.
Thank you.
So, welcome, everyone. An hour later. Isn't he amazing?
He's amazing.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
So, let's honor our time here and jump right into our coaching session, okay? So, if I'm correct by memory, Anna will be coaching Kia, and Nikki will be the primary observer. So, everyone else, except for Anna and Kia, please mute.
Sasha, I double hear my voice. Is that happening with you guys?
No, I hear you clearly. Am I echoing?
Yeah, I have an echo.
All right, well, I'm going to let you guys start. I'll drop off and call back in, and because I'm going to be muted anyway. So you guys go ahead and start your call with everyone else meeting. Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Hi, Kia.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. What about you?
I'm doing really great. Thank you.
Tell me if you can hear me clearly.
I can hear you. Yes. It feels like you're a little bit far away, but I can hear you clearly.
Okay. How are you doing? How things are going?
Things are going great, actually. I just got back from a trip to the East Coast where I was teaching a lot, and I just sort of landed home and just loving being at home.
So what is the agenda today? What would you like to spend the time talking?
You know, I don't know. I wasn't, it crept up on me this day.
So no problem, no problem.
I hadn't sort of thought about what I want to talk about. I don't know. Sorry.
Let's explore and brainstorm and see what comes up that you might want to discuss with me.
Great.
So what has been going on lately in your life?
Well, let's see. Travel and teach and writing pulling together the prospectus for my teacher training. That's really what's been going on.
Uh-huh. And what of all these things I kind of, you feel you might be challenged a little?
Good question. Well, I suppose what I'm really challenged by is finding enough space in my schedule to actually write my teacher training. Like, I do bits here and there, and I did a big push because I needed to get it Yoga Alliance certified, so I sent them all the information they required, which was a significant amount of information. I guess they just changed their rules. So I did a big sort of push forward when I did that. And then what I found is in my quest to stay balanced and relaxed in my life, I haven't really gone back to pulling it together. And I do have somebody available who can help me as an assistant, and so I probably should be using her right now and figuring out how to delegate what to her.
What part of the teacher training hasn't been completed? Like, what specific part is not done yet?
I have to write the manuals for people.
The manual, okay.
Yeah, I know what I'm teaching. I know what the prospectus is. I feel really comfortable, you know, in the content. I just have to organize it and, you know, create a really nice, helpful manual for them. So I've written down all the different sections that will be presented in the teacher training. But now those have to be, you know, just in terms of short form. But then those have to be expanded out now, you know, into materials that they would have in a manual.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I hear you saying that it's a lot of work. Is that right?
It's a lot of work. It is. It's a lot of work. I'm a little stuck because I know I need to show the forms of the people in yoga poses, and I'm kind of in my head stuck about wanting to have somebody illustrate the poses so that it's not photographs, and then, you know, I can put little arrows and drawings on the figures. But I'm a little stuck about, I've reached out to a few people to figure out who could do that for me, but I haven't come up with anything yet. And for some reason I feel like I need to do that first, and I don't, you know, it's not true, I don't.
If I'm hearing correctly, there is a lot of different aspects to this manual, sections, I would say, that if,
yeah.
I'm hearing you saying that you have an idea what that is, like you have an outline. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And why would it be like your favorite part that it would come easy to you to start with? Of all these things that you outlined.
I think I thought that the easiest part would be the illustrations, because I'm very visual, so I felt like, well, if I have the pictures done, you know, then
mm-hmm.
everything else will fit around the pictures because I'm visual.
Uh-huh.
But then I have to decide, you know, there's a few different levels of pictures. It's going to be heavy on the subtle body, my training, so it's figuring out, well, what are those pictures going to be? Am I buying stock photos? Am I, again, having somebody illustrate? So that's kind of where I'm stuck right now.
Do you feel that maybe being personal, like having a human body instead of just a image of a body, might be more in tune to what you want to relate to through the training, through the illustration?
Oh, interesting. I hadn't thought about it in that perspective. What I was thinking of was just really clean lines that I could, you know, add movements of energy through arrows and stuff onto it. So putting that on top of a photograph, I think, would make it just look really messy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So an image, like an outline of the body, would be helpful?
Exactly.
Okay.
It's not so hard. Just figuring out who can do that for me so that I don't have to do it myself. I know I could do it, but that would be a lot of time.
A lot of time. And who do you think might be possible to help you?
Well, I mean, I thought an illustrator. I just don't quite know, you know, unless I advertise for somebody. That's so random, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I haven't done this before.
It might be a good idea to, you I know you have a Facebook page. Maybe you could inquire for an illustrator that does yoga.
Yeah.
That could be an idea of you reaching out and finding a person, the right person for you.
That's a good idea. Exactly. I feel like it does need to be somebody who would understand yoga. But, yes, exactly. I can do that. That's a good step.
Is it something you think you can do soon?
Yes, it would be good to do it very soon. I could do it today, in fact.
Beautiful. And just making that commitment to start from that, I think it's an amazing step.
Yes, that's good, exactly. A couple of weeks ago, I emailed the people that I knew had illustrated, you know, in different manuals before, but I didn't hear anything back. So this is a good next step.
Or maybe even the any communities, your classes, people that they do yoga in general might be able to direct.
Yes. Good idea.
Yeah, beautiful. So the next few days, I would follow up with you and see if you manage to find that amazing person that will help you jumpstart this.
Right. So it's got to be somebody that it would be simple for. And if they, you know, they already illustrate that it would be simple for.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a timeline for this project?
Well, I just know that it has to really be done by, I would say, should be done by January, because my training is in March and I'm going to be traveling in India from mid-February, so it really has to be done by January.
So maybe putting a frame into what you, how long each session, you want to develop each session?
Yes.
And how long do you think each session should be?
You mean, do you mean how long in terms of pages? Or
no, how long as time to coordinate the material?
For me to dedicate to each session that I do? I do best when I have big chunks of time. I don't do so well with short chunks of time. So, you know, 4 hours is usually a good period for me to actually dig in and wrap my mind and, you know, get into the right brainwave state like Dr. David was talking about. So that, you know, that's sort of the way my brain works, big chunks of time. I like it when I have a whole day. If I have a whole day dedicated to one task, I can get a lot done. You know, though, what it's like with teaching yoga, because we're here, there, and everywhere. It's hard to get that big chunk of time.
Right, absolutely. Is it a day of the week that you could commit to that particular section and task?
Yes, I should really do that. Thursdays would be my day, and is from after this phone call. Yes, usually from 11 onwards on a Thursday I could. But Thursday is my day, and Friday as well. I have some time on Friday.
It seems to me that you have a great plan ahead of you.
It's good to speak it out loud. Thank you. Yes. It
You're
is.
Very
I
welcome.
Can do I can do the Thursdays and Fridays. It's really, for me, it's the discipline then of not getting caught up in everything else that's being asked of me on those days, you know, whether it's
Praising
writing
about.
A blog or, you know, sending a description for a festival or signing a contract. Those things I get caught up in.
Coach call? This girl Anna.
So maybe.
Do you ever know Anna?
Are you there, Anna?
Yes, I'm here.
So it's like
okay,
she's possible like, here. She's coping. She's coaching Kia.
Oh, I can hear Jenny, I think. So
Jenny, I think you need to put yourself on mute for about a minute or so.
Yeah. Here sounds like you accomplished just an understanding of how to do it. Is that correct, or you feel
yes,
that?
Yes, Anna, you helped me a lot just to speak it all out loud, and actually, for me, the having said it out loud gives me a lot a stronger will to stick to the plan. So I think, you know, looking for an illustrator, which I know I want to do, and doing all of my other work on the earlier part of the week and then keeping my Thursday and Friday clear when I'm not traveling, at least, to work on this is really helpful.
Beautiful. So I will follow up with you next week and be
yes.
your guardian angels along this process.
I love that. I couldn't think of a better guardian angel. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you, Kia. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, if everyone could unmute, please. And I'm sorry about my echo. We're just going to have to manage that for the rest of the call. Nikki, would you facilitate our feedback conversation?
Hi, guys. I'm not going to lie, I was slightly distracted during the call. My little boy woke up, but I did get a few notes in. Again, it's so funny because I saw a lot of me in Anna, again, like a solver and just wanting to like kind of say like, okay, this is what you should probably do. Because I even wrote other things, Kia, I was thinking you could reach out to a college and a lot of those illustrators will do things for free because they just won't work on the resume. But see, that was not the point. The point was not that. The point was to listen and to get Kia to come up with her own solution and kind of get her out. So what I did was, I thought it was great. I put at the beginning, Anna was great at trying to pull out an agenda because Kia didn't come to the table with an agenda. So she was really great about like, great, let's just talk about it. And then there was one piece that I thought, just like I missed with Jenny, that I think Anna missed, and that was she said at the very beginning, I really should be using my assistant more. And I felt like that's where it would have been helpful to kind of say, okay, great, how could your assistant help you more? Or how do you think your assistant can help you more? How could you utilize your assistant more? And then you could have moved from there. But not doing that, you still were really great about getting back to it. You got her to, you know, talk about the illustrations. I did. There was a smidge hijacking, but again, it's very hard for me to even say anything because I would have done the same thing. But I could see how it wasn't helpful. So I could see, you know, again, like how I did it to Jenny and how there was better questions that could have been asked. And then I thought it was, you know, the last piece of kind of getting her to commit to a time frame was interesting because I felt like Kia was kind of doing the wrap up for herself, which I love. And but I think Anna's great. I think again her energy was really great, and I think she was really trying to like stick to the task at hand. She kept trying to go back to an agenda, But again, I felt like there was some more questions that could have been asked, and that's all I'll say.
That's great, Nikki, and thank you for your feedback. And it's really interesting to see someone else's example and find some of the things that you are continuing to develop in someone else's work. So great insight. Thank you. Minx or Jenny or Cynthia, would you share your thoughts, please? And if there is a bit of background noise, so if you're not talking, let's put ourselves on mute.
Hi, it's Cynthia. I'll go next. I agree that that Anna kind of jumped in between spaces of consulting and coaching, but it was such a great conversation. Anna had very great questions, and she, you know, the conversation did jump around a bit, and I had a tiny bit of a problem focusing. But I think it was because of the energy of the conversation. You know, it was Anna seemed to come from a space of wanting to help very much and you know, resolution. And it also seemed like she came from a space of, you know, she was just right there, zoned in, and it was very personal. So that was nice. And she also did a great job of trying to get an agenda. And I really loved how, when she said, "Oh, I don't have an agenda. I didn't think about it." And, you know, Anna was like, "Okay, so tell me what's going on." So that was a great transition to kind of, you know, not have any awkward moments or space there. So, okay, we've got to get to an agenda. So let's talk about it. Let's go there. That's it.
Great. Thank you, Cynthia. Thanks. Who would like to go next?
I'll go. It's Jenny. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're on mute. So you've got the floor, girlfriend.
So I think that I agree with both Cynthia and with Nikki, and I was for a moment when Kia said, "I don't have an agenda, I don't really, you know," I had a moment of like, "Oh God, what would I do in that situation?" Because Kia is so capable, like she just has so much, she seems like everything, you have a lot going on and you're managing it really well. So what I thought what Anna did was so great, which is like, okay, well, there's always something we can talk about and work on. The question I have though is when Anna said, what about doing something with Facebook, or I wondered if that was something that, is that something that we want to do? And that's always my question because I hijack as well, and I'm working on that. I'm trying to figure out how, what would be another way of dealing with Kia's question about how to get somebody to illustrate without telling her the answer herself. So that's just something that I feel like, God, I just need so much work with, and I wondered how that would be addressed. But otherwise, I thought it was great, and I think that Anna was just so infectious, and her energy and her ideas were really great, and Kia was receptive, and so that's all.
Right. Thanks, Jenny. Are you on a headset?
No.
Okay, no worries. So I just want to address your question here before I forget, and it's probably one that many of us have. I think using your powerful questions and your intuition and maybe having that intuitive moment where there's a shift, there's a way to use the language to get Kia to come up with her own ideas. But it's also fine for Anna to say, "I have this idea, you know, let's talk about it and see how you feel about it." So she can bring up the idea, but then also instill in Kia a conversation around how she feels about it, rather than just coming out and saying, "Hey, this is a great idea." It's phrasing it in a different way where then the client assumes responsibility for those ideas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Can you, if we have time, can you give me an example how that might happen?
Sure. Okay. Sure. Let's watch our time and remind me. Minx.
Hello. I have to say that I had a little work emergency during that call, so I didn't really listen very closely, so I don't think I have clear feedback to provide. I'm so sorry.
Is everything okay?
It's spinning around out there.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Just
it's
like Earth.
I can't really go into details around it.
It's okay. Well, thank you for being honest and still being with us. Kia, how did that feel to you?
It felt great. You know, it's really nice to hear what you say repeated back to you. And, you know, I think that in the course of our normal conversations with people, we don't reflect back very often what we're hearing. So that it really, that really helped me to sort of keep clarifying in myself, you know, and so, and when she did offer suggestions, if it didn't intuitively feel right, I knew right away if it didn't intuitively feel right, and yet when it did, I was willing to go along with it. So I just really appreciated Anna's wonderful, enthusiastic, light manner, and I felt like she's very capable, so I felt, you know, safe just to throw it out there and see what would happen.
That's so interesting, Kia, because you're right. In our everyday conversations, we live in such a fast-paced world, and we're always going, we're always doing, that to actually be still and to have somebody listen to us and to have our thoughts and our concerns and our visions reflected back is just a huge benefit of coaching. That is what coaching is all about. So I like how you drew that insight from that. Anna, what are your thoughts?
I want all the people that I will coach from now on to be like Kia.
Okay, well, you just put that in your contract.
To be honest, like an hour ago, I got a little confused with the time, and when I realized I was off the call, I kind of got nervous about even the coast to coast. But it's really talking to Kia and being hearing her, being light about her agenda and able to trusting my lead and kind of going with it, I truly, really, really enjoyed it. It was easy. And I felt we were getting somewhere. And so it felt really good.
And you both did a great job in continuing to ask the powerful questions, listen, clarify the agenda. And what was really beautiful about this, and it's happened a couple times before in our time together, is that someone, a client, will come to the call and they don't have an agenda. So that tool of brainstorming is super, super useful. That's why it's in there, because even if it's not at the forefront of their mind or they can't articulate what exactly they want in that moment, just by spending time and having a conversation and distilling through some of the things, eventually you're going to come to what they want to talk about. So I thought that brainstorming went brilliantly and it went pretty seamlessly. But my question to you, Anna, if I may, is, you know, sure, we all want clients like Kia, but what if you have a client that's not Kia?
I would probably need to take a deep breath and allow more space to understand what the client needs at the present time from me. But Kia made it easy. That's why I have a preference.
Well, and to Kia's credit, to all of your credit, you guys are very aware of this process, right? We're an intimate group here, and we're all doing the same work. So it's easy to show up in authenticity and be receptive to the collaborative experience. The challenge is when you go outside of our circle and work with people who, A, are not yogis, potentially, B, you know, don't really know about the coaching experience. But that's where you're going to grow. It's where you're going to develop, and it's where you're going to shine. So I invite you not to be attached to a client looking a certain way or having it be easy or difficult, and just sort of take those judgments out and treat each relationship, each coach-client relationship, as its own entity. And for what you both bring to the table collaboratively will be different than your relationship and your client relationship with someone else.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes,
I definitely welcome it, and I know there's a lot to be learned. So I'm not opposed. I just kind of was excited.
Yeah, and we all have a lot to learn. Gosh, every time I listen to Dr. Dave, I'm like, wow, I've got so much to learn. But that was great. So let's see here. Jenny, before I get to that example, and we may have to do it offline, on the syllabus. So last week, we got goofed up here a little bit with time, so in terms of weeks. So last week was week 10, and you had homework. You saw the reading, page 185 through 194, and we were supposed to talk about all of that this week, but that will just happen next week. And in addition, I'd love for you to read, if you're on week 11 in the syllabus, page 195 through 202. And also, I would like for you to reflect on this 12-week journey and the impact it's had on you both personally and professionally. That's part of your homework. And I'd love to hear those next week. Okay.
I'm so sorry. Can you repeat that? Someone was beeping into my phone.
No problem. So in addition to last week's reading, which you may want to review, which was pages 185 through 194, I would like for you to additionally read page 195 through 202 and create just a sort of a one or two sentence reflection on how this 12-week journey has impacted you, both personally and professionally. Okay. Does everybody have that? You're welcome.
Yes.
So we're right at our time. If you have to go off the call, totally fine. We'll talk to each other next week. But oh, I'm sorry. Before you go, this is the time to dive into your exam. If you want to now, you can. You can wait till after the 12th week. But I would really ask you to have that exam completed within 1 week of our last call. If you want to start doing it now and turning it in, that's great. Then she'll send them to me, and I'll take a look at them. Like I said, there's no pass or fail.
Would you be able to send the link one more time?
Absolutely. Does anyone else besides Anna need the link? Okay, not a problem. I'll take care of that. So I just wanted to remind you all of that. If you need to go off the call right now, I certainly understand and respect your time. What I was just going to say to Jenny is, you know, basically an example, if I'm hearing you correctly, was it when Anna suggested Facebook to reach out for an illustrator?
Yes.
Okay. And so what, how, I'm going to throw it out to you. What would you, how could you say it differently to a client?
Sorry, my phone is, I don't know what it's doing. How would I throw it out to a client? Well, I would maybe say, so if you're looking for an illustrator, what might be some avenues that you might be able to find one? I'm not sure. I mean, I'm confused about a little bit about the whole process, because if I remember correctly, Kia just said, you know, I'm not sure if I want to use an illustrator, if I want to get photos, or how to do it exactly. And then I think Anna just proposed the idea. Did I remember that?
I could have remembered it in a different way. There's no worries. I mean, it jumped around a little bit. She said she, exactly what you said, Kia, you know, said that she wanted help. And then I think Anna went into a way of possibly using Facebook to get some help. But I like the way that you just phrased that. You asked it in the form of a question so that Kia, or whoever the client is, would be able to come up with some of their own ideas of resources they could use to help in that way with photos or illustrations or helping to delegate. Did that answer your question, Jenny?
Yes.
Is it still on? Okay. So it's just a lot of it is maybe putting it in the form of a powerful question. You can have this idea. You're like, oh, maybe Anna came up with this idea. Facebook is a great, you know, media outlet. Of course it is. But as you get more refined in your questions, you can just shift it around to keep that idea, use your intuition, but put it in the form of a powerful question and then brainstorm a little bit with your client. Because she may or may not have come up with Facebook. She may have come up with some other resources. But you're getting her to think along those lines without hijacking.
Great. Thank you so much. Gotcha.
You're welcome. Thanks, you guys. Have an awesome week, and I'll look forward to talking to you next week.
Bye, Tasha.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.